Confederation line update, mise à jour sur la ligne de la Confédération. Those staff who are not required to be here, we'll see you later. And we have Mr. Manconi and his team and a PowerPoint presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If you could just give us a minute or two to set up, that'd be great. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of committee. Joining me today is Michael Morgan, who you know is the Stage 2 and Stage 1 Director of Light Rail Construction, and Mr. Peter Lausch, who is the CEO of RTG. I'm going to start off today's presentation with a Ready for Rail campaign video. It's a video that demonstrates the experience our customers will have when they are inside the light rail vehicles. Mr. Mayor, this next slide is the artwork of Parliament Station. The last time you saw this as a council was renderings, and it is an amazing piece of work. It will welcome our tourists, our customers, and I'm sure will be photographed by many. They're literally in the final stages of some panels of this artwork in Parliament Station. So, Mr. Mayor, you recall at the last FEDCO meeting, there were eight critical elements that we were tracking. I'm going to go through all of those again today and give you a status report on each one of those. I've also added number 9, which is winter operations. That's a new one, and I'll speak to that. I know there's been some questions and comments about vehicle performance and winter operations and so forth. I'm happy to report, Mr. Mayor, that RTG has done some amazing work in the last couple of weeks, and overall there is significant progress on every one of these elements, and so I'll go through them all with fleet availability, the station occupancy, the tunnel ventilation systems, the train control systems, our control room, the control systems on the trains themselves, the System Assurance Program, which is the oversight by the Independent Safety Auditor, the end-to-end practice running, and the winter operations, which we've talked about. But first, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to talk about the vehicle, because I know there's been a lot of questions, and I want to address all of your questions, both in the PowerPoint presentation and any questions from member of committee and council. First and foremost, I've heard the comments about this being a vehicle that is not used anywhere else in the world. There are 2,600 of these vehicles in 60 cities and 23 countries around the world. The countries are listed there, and including in winter climate conditions. And the emphasis on these light rail vehicles is the Citizen Spirit has been used, and with every different application, they get adapted to the environment of that local environment, as weather conditions. So if you're in extreme heat, as some of those countries are, they add extra HVAC components to increase the cooling effects in the vehicles. If you're in winter conditions, they adapt the vehicle for the conditions that it will experience. Now, I want to go back in how these vehicles got put onto the test track. And, Mr. Mayor, we didn't simply just pick a vehicle and put it out there. There is rigorous testing, independent testing, oversight, and inspections, and countless thousands of hours of reviews before you put a vehicle out into testing track conditions. We're blessed in Ottawa that we have the National Research Council Laboratory. It's one of the few laboratories of its kind in the world. It's recognized as an industry leader. And whether you're buying trains, diesel trains, electric trains, military equipment, fire equipment, police equipment, snow plows, this lab is available for independent testing by some of the leading vehicle experts in the world. And we were very clear, so back to the adaptation requirements for Ottawa's climate, all of the systems on the vehicle needed and the subsystems needed to work at minus 40 degrees Celsius before we even start to test the vehicle on the track. So these are photos of the actual testing and the independent engineers and technicians that were conducting the various assessments to ensure that the vehicle could meet Ottawa's extreme climates. And I'm emphasizing that because, yes, and under winter operations, I will talk about what occurred with the vehicle that was stuck. It had nothing to do with the vehicle. It had everything to do with the maintenance of the track system, which I will talk about in great detail in my presentation, and the response that RTG has brought forward in that regard. So this notion that the vehicle is not adaptable or will be suited for Ottawa's climate is not accurate. It's gone through the rigorous testing before we even put it out on the line, and all of its components can work. It's also been used in other cold weather climates, St. Petersburg, Moscow. So this is the same vehicle, and you recall when you chose this vehicle years ago, the nose, the front of the vehicle gets picked, so we went with a different nose configuration and the door configuration. So the vehicle, the guts of the vehicle, the platform, and all those elements are standard, and then you basically pick the look and feel of the external vehicle that you want. This is out in service in St. Petersburg and Moscow, and this is in France. And note the track conditions. The track conditions are clear. Now let's talk about what the vehicle did this winter. We have been out all winter long, and like all of us, whether you were flying, driving, in a bus, in a truck, in a car, you experience all these winter conditions, and these vehicles have experienced all these winter conditions. I've seen them firsthand. In snow, ice pellets, you can talk to Kevin Wiley about the record level freezing rain, the rain, the extreme freeze-thaw temperatures and winds and so forth. The vehicles have been out in all those conditions. And yes, with our rigorous oversight, we have been very critical when we needed to be. So some of those log reports that you heard about. And we have also been very acknowledging of when they've performed well, and I'll get to that in a moment. So the vehicle has been used in the winter conditions. As these pictures demonstrate, this is the single vehicle. Sorry, just whoever's working the clicker, if we could go forward on the English version, please. This is on the single. And as many of you saw, coincidentally, this was in the Citizen today. We have had double train configuration in winter conditions. And more importantly, they have been out since last summer, including in double train configuration. So I'm happy to receive any comments or questions about what vehicles have been out when. They've been out in all types of winter conditions. So let's talk about the nine critical elements. Major progress on fleet availability from RTG. You recall, I was not pleased where they were before. They have made some significant progress. And the experts that we have on this project, including CEOs from New York City, Chicago, Boston, St. Louis, have all told us that when you get to this end part of the project, things will come in bunches. You'll get a lot of progress in clusters. And so on fleet availability, you know the numbers. It's 15 double trains and four spare vehicles, so the total 34 vehicles. I'm happy to report that last week, four consecutive days, 24/7, 12 single train vehicles. At one point, we got to 13, then 14, then 15. Four continuous days of operation, 700 hours running occurred, and they traveled 17,500 kilometers with virtually no issues or errors. And this weekend, because I heard a comment they weren't out on the track, no, they were not out on the track. That was designed. There was a full de-energization of the track system. They're out testing new winter equipment, which I'll get to in a moment, and they were doing some adjustments and some CBTC testing. On station occupancies, major progress. I'm happy to report that nine stations are now ready for occupancy. There's some final paperwork and minor touch-ups that need to be done. The other stations are literally around the corner, and they're tied to the tunnel ventilation system, which I'll talk about next. On the tunnel ventilation system, that's trending very well. The final testing late Friday, because some of the reports come through from Vancouver, the experts are there. We received additional reports. There's one test that needs to be completed in the connector tunnel that connects the storage facility to the main line. That's scheduled for later this week or early next week. And once we receive those final reports, we'll be able to sign off on the tunnel ventilation system. And again, on the oversight, I'm happy that I secured not only the head of City of New York that ran all rail, commuter rail, and bus operations, literally the largest operation in North America, but he brought in the best tunnel ventilation expert in North America, who actually wrote the fire protection code for tunnel ventilation systems. So I'm just sharing that, because I've had some questions about what oversight and what expertise do we have at the table, and I know RTG has brought in some expertise from overseas on the tunnel ventilation system, and those technical experts have been looking at all these issues, and they're fully aligned on the tunnel ventilation system. On the train control system, so this is the CBTC, and you remember months ago I told you that was a critical one to watch. It is going very well. 24 of the 34 vehicles have their safety certificates signed off. And I forgot to mention when I was doing the fleet update, all 34 vehicles are complete. They just have minor deficiencies left with them. So they are all completed. And so when you see approvals, they're just subsets of the 34 vehicle fleet operation. With respect to the control center, many members of the Transit Commission or their staff were over yesterday. They saw it live and in operation. It is going very well. There are some software upgrades planned for mid-March and some interface issues, which the teams are working through. I believe they're working on some of this today, live in the control center. So that is trending well also. With respect to the power system, next slide, please. On the power system, really what remains here is a full load test of all vehicles going up and down the entire network. And what's occurring right now with the vehicles is we're trending towards trying to get 20 single vehicles on the system. That's by design before you move to doubles, because what you want to do is stress test all of the subcomponents. And once you've done that with 20 vehicles or so, then you move to the double consist arrangement, and you know that all your systems are working well. So RTG's move is they peaked last week at that 12 to 15 range. They're moving to 20 vehicles, and they're going to move to double vehicles. This morning we had 6 singles and a double consist out there doing a bunch of testing and commissioning. So the load test on the power system is some final sign-offs, and then the remaining full load test to stress test it. On system assurance, this is that critical safety oversight. We've said it over and over again. There's the safety auditor that reviews all of the safety cases and basically files a statement of no objection, which means that there are no concerns with the many reports that get submitted by RTG and are reviewed by our staff and the independent experts that we've brought in. And our experts are vehicle experts, they're systems experts, tunnel ventilation, control rooms, winter maintenance, and so forth. The practice plan running, which RTG has volunteered to do, they're not contractually obligated to do this. We're focusing on loading up that system to that 20 vehicle count or so, and then migrating to 15 double vehicles running from Tunney's to Blair. That gets that confidence level and ensures that all of the system elements are operating as per the project agreement. Number 9 is the new element that I've added. And the vehicle that was stuck. And it was stuck because the track was not clear, just like planes were delayed and trucks were stuck that day and so forth. And some clarity on what gets your track in the state that it needs to get to. Running multiple vehicles helps, just like a road. They don't plow the track, though. Let's be clear. The vehicles do not plow the track. What they do is they keep the rail face at the top of the rail clear of snow. And as Mr. Morgan was saying earlier in some media interviews, when you have multiple trains, those 15 double trains going back and forth, your buildup of your snow on your track does not occur, just like it doesn't occur on the Trillium line. And then off-peak hours, Trillium line, you can go take a look at it. We clear the banks so that doesn't build up on the side of the vehicle bogies and so forth. So that vehicle was stuck, and yes, it was towed in, and everything was done according to the plan. Now, I would have been concerned if I would have went to Mr. Lausch and said, there was a problem with your winter maintenance plan. But that was not what Mr. Lausch said. Mr. Lausch quickly got our teams in a room with my experts, Chicago, New York, and Boston. You can look those up. Those are three major operations that experienced significant winter events where their systems were stressed to the point that they had to shut them down. And they brought their lessons learned to the table, and Mr. Lausch, within hours, mobilized more equipment because he also manages RTM. Leased equipment came in, rented contractors, and more importantly, acknowledged that their winter operations plan needed to change, has changed, and they need more resources and equipment on the ground. And the oversight that we're doing on that is I'm bringing those experts to the table, and the dialogue has been very receptive. They're looking at the equipment. We're reworking their operations, winter plans, and ensuring that in the future we can respond to those. Will we have very significant snowfalls like we had that week? Absolutely. And the best that you do is you adapt, you ensure that you have a good, solid winter operations plan, and you bring in equipment like this. This is what they were testing on the weekend. This is actually a melter, and it clears the railhead interface that I was talking about, particularly over the track switches, where the trains switch over from one track to another. And the response and the feedback was very positive from the operational staff. So the handover requirements, a reminder that in order for RTG to achieve their RSA date, all the system assurance documentation needs to be in. All of the construction work and site works need to be completed. They can only be left with minor deficiencies. The testing and commissioning, including a 12 consecutive day trial running period needs to be near perfect. There's requirements for that, and that's why we're big proponents of the practice plan, so that they can be successful in that and that we see the positive results, and that's running your actual train volumes, your train capacities, your headways and so forth, all the systems working the way they're intended to do. They have to comply with all the safety requirements as approved by the city's safety auditor, and operational readiness on all fronts, including maintenance. Now, RTG late last week advised us that they will not be achieving the March 31st RSA date. They have advised us that they will hand over the system to the city in Q2 of 2019. They will be providing us with a new date. And technically, while they do have 60 days under the project agreement to give us a new RSA date, they've advised us they will not be exercising the full 60-day period. What we've had, and we had very positive discussions last week, the city manager, myself, Mr. Morgan, and the executive team of RTG and their board, was that prior to issuing that new date and publicizing it and so forth, we will bring in our experts with Mr. Lausch's team, and they will present to us a line of path as to how they're going to get to that new RSA date. And we want to be fully cognizant and understanding of how they will achieve it and what issues lie before them so that we have a good understanding of that. So key things, as I'm sure there are going to be raised, the draft 2019 budget does not change, nor is it at risk. The fare freeze for July 1 remains in place and is subject to council approval as part of your overall budget. And stage 2 is not affected. This does not delay stage 2 in any way. The steps looking ahead, continue to monitor all the critical elements that I've outlined. Continue our operational readiness program. And again, the Transit Commission members yesterday had a taste of some of the activities that are going on. It's a lot of work behind the scenes. Plan for RSA, the schedule, the workforce adjustment, route changes, booking, logistics, and so forth. And to give you some comfort there, yesterday I showed the chair the massive booking operation we have underway. We have what's called a double booking. So we have pre-bus service and post-LRT service. The union has been very cooperative, and our staff have been very patient with us in adapting to the potential changes. Continue to provide the rigorous oversight on RTG. The Ready for Rail campaign that you've seen is rolling out, and we have a major update to Transit Commission on all the customer-facing elements. Review the proposed RSA date once it's provided to us. And we continue to work with RTG on negotiating through the project agreement. No, we're not in court suing each other. There's none of that going on at this time. No payments have been issued to RTG, and as directed by the city manager, we continue to track all our incremental costs, which are going to be deducted from RTG's outstanding payments, including, and a reminder, because I've been asked during in the budget process, how are we funding the freeze and so forth, there's $4 million a month that has not gone to RTM for their maintenance piece. So there's that, and there's all the other costs that we're recouping from them in that regard. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That concludes the presentation. Happy to take any questions.
Great. Thank you very, very much. Thorough report. We have a number of people who would like to ask questions or speak. Councillor Hubley, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Mr. Manconi, for your presentation. One of the questions I have, and you've touched a bit on it there, is we're seeing reports about that there's four cars out today being tested. You mentioned that we've had a couple of double car tests now. It seems some frame that as there's problems with the cars and that's why the testing regime changes every day. Can you in fact confirm for us that it is a series of different tests as part of the protocol, if you will, that, you know, maybe one day we only want to run six cars back to back. Sometimes it's from Tunney's to Blair. Sometimes it's just between two or three stations.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, there's all sorts of testing, commissioning, and training going on. So last night we had four, then we went to five vehicles, then we went to a double. They were not running from Tunney's to Blair as an example. We had segments blocked off so that we could get multiple driver training operations going on. Mr. Lausch was also doing some CBTC work on the weekend, so there was vehicles out on a small portion of the track. And with the state-of-the-art control systems and CBTC that you have, we have the ability to do all that blocking off and so forth. So you'll have various counts of vehicles, various operations underway, and you'll see different things. And yes, eventually you'll get to that 15 double consist trains going from Tunney's to Blair, like we saw last week with the 12 going Tunney's to Blair.
Thank you. You've also said, we as a council have said all along, that we wanted the testing plan completed to the highest standards. We weren't going to accept the trains until that was completed. We've been criticized for it. We've been told we're hiding behind safety. But one of the things that's recently been reported is on these incident reports that come out of testing and development of these trains. Can you please confirm that incident reports like this or change logs are very common in not just the building of a train, but a road, a building? All major projects will have incident reports. And my second part to that question is that the issues identified, and we'll take an example about the recently reported panels coming off the trains, that those issues get addressed and they're fixed, and that's not going to be an ongoing issue. Could you address that, please?
With any build of any infrastructure, you want oversight, and it's a question of what do you do with that oversight. I'm proud of what our staff and what our experts have been doing, and Mr. Lausch, I'm sure, can speak to it. We've been unrelentless in... We've been very rigorous in ensuring that any and all defects are reported to him and his team, and he's been very responsive. With respect to the panels flying off the side of the vehicle, I believe it was that one vehicle that was stuck. That was a buildup of snow on the side and pushing out the fiberglass panels. And, yeah, that's going to occur because of the accumulation on the track that we talked about. So we are overseeing every single aspect of this. We have not just city staff, we have rail and system experts, and we report, and we make sure that everything's followed through accordingly.
And one of these reports that were in the media from an incident report also said that there was a suggestion that the system shut down at 35 centimeters of snow. Can you address that? Was that a shutdown just during the testing piece, or are they recommending that the system not operate above 35 centimeters of snow?
No, the system is intended to operate during all winter conditions. That particular day, we made the decision jointly with RTG to shut this to bring that vehicle that was stuck in, and we knew that they hadn't kept up with the snow clearing operation, so they needed to restore the track to the condition that's appropriate for that. In the future, there is no system in the world that never shuts down. And will you be in a situation where we'll have an extreme ice storm or something like that, nobody should guarantee you in this seat that you will never shut the system down. You will modify your plan according to winter conditions so that if you're snowing during the day and you have your volumes are low, you can adapt service and so forth and get ready for your next peak service day. It's very, very dynamic.
Thank you, Mr. McConey. Can you also, for the benefit of council and the public, confirm that OC Transpo is prepared for whatever happens in the next quarter? Like, we're ready for when the train comes, but you've just completed a double booking. So you're ready to run the bus service if we have to through the whole second quarter and beyond, but you're also ready to transition over to rail if RTG meets a date in the second quarter.
We are ready. We continue to be ready, and that's why we're going to work with this date. We need to overlay our pieces onto it to make sure that we can. It's not just a random date that's picked that doesn't work for us, because we have a lot of logistics, and I know that many of councillors have asked about the bus routes and so forth. So you have a budget that's before you that gives us all the tools and resources to do what we need to do. And we're very lucky. We have 3,000 dedicated employees that have been doing this for 5 years now that are ready, willing, and want this line launched and all the changes associated with it.
Thank you. And in an earlier FEDCO presentation, when we were first talking about the March 31st date, you were very blunt, and I appreciate your honesty to the public and to council that you weren't comfortable with that March 31st date. Given, and I believe there's a lot of good news in this presentation today. I hope my colleagues agree that progress is being made. Are you much more, do you have a much higher level of confidence in this Q2 plan?
We like what we see. That list of eight, it seems like a long list, but like I said, in the last couple of weeks, a lot of things have come through. And we can't minimize them because what getting things like station occupancy out of the way, the tunnel ventilation system, the control room and so forth, that enables Mr. Lausch and his team and our team to focus on the single most important thing. It's going to come down to the vehicles and running those 15 vehicles back and forth and racking up a lot of kilometers on it. And I know his team is excited about that and focused on that, and so are we.
Thank you. And my last question for you, we're going to go back to OC Transpo. I'm getting comments from councillors that people are abandoning the service. Can you give us an update? In fact, the last update you showed that the ridership numbers were going up a bit. Can you confirm if we're still trending up or are we going the reverse?
Well, as I reported during the tabling the budget, last year we were up 1%. And I'm happy to report that we just got the January numbers in, and we're 2% higher than last year. So I don't know where this word abandoning the service is occurring. We are through with all the detours that we have going on, and the harsh winter conditions in January to be up 2%. I think that's an amazing indication that people are not abandoning the service. Quite the opposite.
Thank you, Mr. Manconi. Mr. Mayor, I would agree, and I think, while I have a couple of seconds left on the mic, I'd like to thank the ridership of OC Transpo for sticking with us, and I hope they hear the good news today that we are actually getting a lot closer to having the rail service. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Right, thank you, Councillor. Councillor Luloff, please.
Thank you very much for your presentation. It's run in St. Petersburg. I hear it's really balmy this time of year, and I can only imagine that we have very, very similar climate, so that gives me a lot of confidence. I'm also pleased to hear that that this current delay that you guys have announced today will not delay Stage 2. We need Stage 2 to come to trim. We really, really need to make sure that we get Stage 2 through, because Stage 1 doesn't make sense without Stage 2, so I'm pleased to hear that. And I'm really pleased to see, I had quite a few questions about winter operations, obviously, considering reports this week. Really glad to see the melter. I was wondering if you guys might be able to spend just a couple of moments talking about what this piece of equipment does, how often it'll be deployed, and really how it operates.
I'll ask Mr. Lausch to talk to that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So we did a trial run this weekend, and it worked extremely well. What it will do, in addition to the snow clearing equipment, what it does, it allows us to clear the snow between the tracks, and that then exposes the transponders. The transponders work with snow cover, but you want to try to keep that to a minimum. So we did a trial run this weekend, as I said, and we're going to be procuring, we rented it to give it a try, and we're going to be procuring that plus some additional equipment.
How many of these pieces of equipment are we going to be procuring?
So right now we're going to commit to one. I can tell you that RTM is making a strong case for getting a second one. So we'll definitely have one, and as I said, we'll probably get a second one. But there is a contingency plan in that we are renting this locally.
Yeah.
So if need be, we can always use that as a resource.
In your opinion, is one sufficient enough for the amount of track in Stage 1?
I think we need to try it. I think one would be sufficient for Stage 1. But as I said, I'm also a fan of redundancy. So I think we'll probably end up seeing two out there. And as I said, we have a third-party contractor that can provide us one on short notice.
With the additional amount of track coming in Stage 2, how many pieces of this equipment specifically are we going to require, in your opinion?
So we've not gone down that road yet. We've just been focusing on Stage 1, of course, and we'll assess that. After we get some positive results from what we have now, we'll extrapolate that to the additional track.
Great. Should a train become inoperable on the tracks during winter conditions in the East End, let's say between Montreal and Jeanne d'Arc stations, what will be the process to get passengers safely to their destination, and what will be the way that you remove the train from the network if needed?
So that Mr. Mayor, through you, that section of track, if you strand a vehicle in a remote location, typically on a transit system, you would, rely on emergency services to assist at that location to do kind of a direct transfer to a bus. Equally, you can, depending on the scenario, you can use another train, an operable train, to quickly connect to it and tow it to the adjacent, the nearest station. That's obviously the preferred approach, is to get to a station. And then depending on the impacts on service, there's some opportunities to route other traffic around, rail traffic around that train. That's something that we've built into the network to kind of mitigate those scenarios where you do have a kind of a blockage on the network. And then in very extreme cases, you can do alternate service if you need to. But we're working on ensuring that we have the capacity to kind of run a minimum headway around any obstructions on the track. And the team is looking at all those scenarios to see where, if a train stops in this location, how would we recover that train? How would we assist the passengers in those events?
We're pushing back the delivery date for, I believe, a fourth time today. We're starting to lose the confidence of a significant portion of the residents of Ottawa. So what steps are you going to take to get the confidence of our residents back?
So with safety and reliability being the underpinning of everything associated with this system, that's the focus that I have on it. The oversight to ensure that the taxpayers get everything they are paying for in the $2.1 billion contract, that's number two. We can go back months ago when we were having discussions with RTG, and they were doing what commercial companies do. They're asking if we would take a phased approach to launching and so forth. We said absolutely not. The relentless pursuit for perfection in terms of what they're supposed to deliver, the continuous message of it's ready when it's ready and ready according to what the project agreement calls for, all those things wrapped up in terms of accountability and ensuring that we give you, City Council and the taxpayers, $2.1 billion system that meets the 10,700 passengers per hour per direction requirement. At the end of the day, it's about that. And yes, I understand customers are frustrated. I shared my concern about the bus service and what our customers have been enduring. Mr. Lausch hears about it from, he called me after the last Transit Commission and said, I didn't know I was responsible for buses being late trying to get to people in service, and that's because they've been on detour. And all those things are important, and at the end of the day, getting what we paid for that is safe and reliable is the focus and will continue to be the focus.
Let's continue on that line just a little bit here. What can we do in the meantime to improve the reliability of our bus service?
So before you in the budget, you've done a fare freeze, which I think goes a long way. That was a concern we heard loud and clear. You have $5 million invested once we open the LRT. I want to talk about what the union has done in partnership with us. They have given us, I believe, I went through the list last week, I'm going to say about six or seven major concessions with us where they're getting extra operators in. That's why the cancellations are down in the last couple of weeks, by the way. They're working every single piece of overtime that we can put out there. And yes, I know people will say they're paid well for that, but they're exhausted also, and it's been a tough winter for them. We have mechanics, we have attendants, we have people working throughout the weekend. The double booking that I talked about was on the weekend. That was so that we did not disrupt service. So we're being very innovative with our staff and with our unions. The fleet count is doing very, very well, even with the harsh winter conditions, so that gets the reliability up. And the oversight in the control room, again, the tour that we did yesterday where we're trying to ensure that, we really minimize the number of canceled trips out there. So we've had a good week or so with all those mitigations coming together, and it's a constant pursuit.
I know we talk about how, these delays to Stage 1 don't really delay Stage 2, but during the election, I went on the best information that I had from you guys. And we were supposed to see trains at Trim Road in 2022. We learned last week that that's not going to be until 2025. What lessons have we learned throughout this process in Stage 1 now that we're nearly completing it that we can apply to Stage 2 to avoid delays in project delivery?
So two things. The first, the timing has nothing to do with the delay of LRT 1. So it's not that Stage 1 is not delaying Stage 2. That's the bidders coming back as, you know, based on the market saying they need more time. On Stage 2, you've already commenced work. You've purchased the vehicles. You've expanded the maintenance storage facility. We're doing some early works for the Trillium Line extension and so forth. The lessons learned, there was a public report that went out a few years ago. And then myself, Mr. Morgan, Mr. Swale have a list pages long of lessons learned, things we can do better, and so forth that have all been incorporated into the procurement of Stage 2. Having said that, there's a lot of things that are going well in Stage 1 in terms of the accountability and the financial pain that Mr. Lausch and his team are feeling, which had this been a conventional design bid build, you would have millions and millions of dollars being drained out of your reserve accounts to cover the sinkhole, to cover the continuing construction costs and so forth. Because that's the other comment I heard, well, we could have done this ourselves and it would have been better and so forth. The risk was transferred to our partners and they have the financial risks.
Are RTG going to be subject to any penalties because of this further delay?
Yes, they get another $1 million hit. And they also get the incurring bill of recovery of the costs.
Okay. I really appreciate your presentation today. I just want to end on a comment that I'd like to read about the kind of MFIPA releases. This might be to staff in general. And your responses to them before I read about it in Joanne Chianello's column next time. It would have gone a long way for me to have that information, that was going out prior to being flooded with questions from constituents. I do really appreciate your presentation today. I think it goes a long way to building confidence here at Council. It certainly has built a lot of confidence as far as I'm concerned, and I hope that my constituents agree with me.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to address that issue that the Council raised because as far as we know, or what we confirm, there has been no MFIPA release of the information that's been reported in the media. That was received by, I guess, a leak. Someone distributed that information, so staff were not aware of the information being in the media until it was actually in the media, the same as council. So there's no way for us to prevent that. Obviously, someone is talking to the media, and we are very diligent about ensuring that council has information when we're MFIPing it and providing the information to this committee or by memo to council, and we've been very consistent about that. However, we can't respond to something we don't know about.
To all staff, then, look, we're all part of the same team. When you catch us off guard with something like that, it makes it very difficult for us councillors to work with you and to back you up. So I would appreciate some discretion moving forward. We work for you guys. You work with us. Let's act as one team. We're one team here at the city, and I'd like to see that moving forward.
Mr. Mayor, I just want to reiterate that I appreciate what the councillor is saying, but we do act as one team. But, however, this was leaked information to the media.
I'm talking about the person that directly to the person.
Oh, the person.
Leaked.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to talk to that person, too, but that's another story.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, councillor. Councillor Brockington, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and good morning. And thank you for that line of question from Councillor Lulof. My questions to start off with, Mr. Lausch, I appreciate you being here again for the second month in a row. I appreciated the information you provided last month, and I remind you, sir, that last month you said with confidence that you would be able to deliver the handover to the city by March 31st of this year. And you were aware, because I asked you, of what the outstanding tasks were to accomplish as part of the handover, and you were aware, because you acknowledged, how long each task would take. And given that Mr. Manconi has said today that you made significant progress, which is a good report, why aren't you delivering the system by March 31st? What happened within the last month? If you made significant progress, and you knew what the outstanding tasks were, and you knew how long it was going to take, Why are we not getting the system by March 31st?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So when I was here last month, I did say that I was confident with the 31st of March date, and that was on me speaking on behalf of RTG, and it was based on a schedule that we had with ORTC and with Alstom. And if you recall, I said that of the 8 critical items that we were tracking, the key to success was the fleet availability and the end-to-end running. While we've had a very, very good last week, as Mr. Manconi noted in the presentation, on the 28th of February, we were obliged by the PA to advise the city if we were going to meet the date or not. And as I said, our decision to confirm or not confirm that date was predicated on fleet availability and end-to-end running. On the 28th of February, we were not comfortable enough with where we were. We had been making good progress, but we had not seen consistent progress. We had not seen consistent vehicles running. We hadn't been able to load the system, partly in due to the weather, and that affected us. It caused about a 6-day delay in terms of getting vehicles back out on the track, getting vehicles through the yard. So in terms of, you know, what were the reasons? As I said, the other of the 8 items, 6 were trending extremely well, but we weren't comfortable enough on the 28th of February to commit to that 31st of March date.
So today, March 5th, you're aware of, ask you the same question. You're aware of the outstanding tasks that need to be completed by your team. I hope you're aware of how long each task will take, whether it's independent or concurrent to the other tasks. And today we're hearing that the new target date is Q2 of 2019. Are you confident that you will be able to hand over this system to the city by Q2 2019?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I am confident. We also had discussions with the city last week, Mr. Kanalakis, Mr. Manconi, Mr. Morgan, and our executive committee. The trend is very positive right now, and we want to see this trend continue over the next 10 to 14 days. So as Mr. Manconi said, we want to load the system with 20 single vehicles. That will tax the system. That will tax the overhead catenary system. That will tax the zone controllers. Once we've done that repetitively and consistently, which is our line of sight, which should be next week, then we'll start to couple vehicles. And so within about 14 days, we should have that confidence based on how we're trending now, and then we'll be in a position to discuss a new date within Q2 with the city.
And just so I'm clear, is an actual date going to be confirmed and publicly released? Because Q2 can go as late as June 30th. Are you going to provide greater clarity on that date? And if so, when does that get released?
So absolutely. We have a contractual obligation to provide a new date. And as I said, we want to hold off on committing to a date until we've seen these 10 to 14 days of consecutive, consistent, reliable running.
Okay. Mr. Manconi, just flipping to you to follow up on a question from Councillor Luloff, the $5 million that are to proceed with those service improvements.
All of those route changes are linked to the bus network that you have and that you're transitioning to. I did last week, because I know Councillor Cavanaugh asked me the same question, is there any of those routes that could be done sooner? I put Mr. Scrimger and his team to the paces to say, is there any of those route enhancements that can be done? Unfortunately, no, because it's so intertwined into everything else. And again, I'm just going back to what the chair saw yesterday, the booking logistics of pre-train and post-train. Sincerely, Councillor, if I could make those route adjustments, I know how important they are to you and your customers, I would do them. And I can assure you that I've done my diligence. I've asked Pat to take another look at it with his team, and he's at a loss. He can't figure out a way to do it that wouldn't cause a double adjustment to you and make things worse.
Is that $5 million value an annualized number based on, you know, we're assuming a handover of March 31st. So has that been calculated from April 1st to December 31st, 2019? And if so, if we don't get the service opening, let's just say Canada Day, is there more opportunity using that $5 million to add more routes since it's no longer going to cover 9 months? Do you know what I'm getting at?
Yes, I do, but unfortunately you can't do that because then you're annualized. You would have a budget pressure. You'd create a budget pressure, and if I'm wrong, Marion will correct me, you'll create a budget pressure for yourselves in 2020. $5 million is your annualized portion, okay, and you'll get in some difficulty.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Suds, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Some of my questions have been answered as we've gone along. Just to build on Councillor Brockington's question around the $5 million and the service enhancements that are coming when the train comes online, just to confirm then that those improvements that we discuss at Transit Commission will occur once the train becomes active, correct? Is that
the direction to staff is immediately following the opening of the train, we get those route changes in as quickly as possible. I have to see what the new date is to map all that out. And my assurance to every councillor is we will circle back with you to give you the exact timing on that, because when I tabled the budget, I said I know you'd want to be involved in the rollout of the announcements and so forth to your committee. So Pat has to map all that out for us.
Okay. And then further to your last comment, you've stated there's nothing that can be done between now and then as far as starting any of these enhancements or routes. Is there anything that we can take back to residents around the concerns around reliability? Anything that we can convey between now and in-service date that will put them at ease?
The mitigation measures that I mentioned earlier are helping out on reliability, so we've had a good week. Hopefully spring is around the corner. That helps significantly, both from a traffic volume perspective and a stress on the vehicles and so forth. So I'm pleased with the mitigation measures. That's helped, and we're not done that yet. So I think you can take that back, and better weather will certainly help.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor McKinney, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to pick up on some of the points that you raised, Mr. Manconi, about the reliability of the trains in winter weather conditions, especially in the winter event that we had a couple of weeks ago. I'd like to know is, you know, have there ever been any concerns expressed by our staff or RTG about the reliability of trains in winter weather?
You certainly that day we you heard about it in terms of the vehicle being stuck out there, but it had nothing to do with the train. It had everything to do with the snow accumulation on the track, plugging up the bogies and the side of the vehicle.
So prior to that day and since that day, there have never been any concerns raised by staff about the overall reliability of the trains and the regulator that clears the track. Then let me expand my question a little bit. So in terms of the snow clearing by the ballast regulator and in terms of the trains moving along the track, there have been... just to be clear, you're saying that our staff and or RTG have never expressed any concerns about reliability in winter conditions?
No, I'm not saying that, Councillor. As I said in my presentation, we have shared concerns, issues, testing, commissioning results for the last 5 years with RTG. And, you know, when you use the term ballast regulator, that's a technical term that's out there. Including my staff have been wrong sometimes, and RTG staff have been wrong. I know one staff member released some information about catenary being down on the yard, and I was asked if I knew about it. I absolutely knew about it. And yes, some catenary came down the yard, and RTG fixed it up and so forth. We had winter issues last fall. I think it was an early snowstorm. There were some vehicles that were stuck in the yard. I have no concern sharing that throughout 5 years of a $2.1 billion rail system, there have been a lot of concerns expressed both from our side, RTG side, independent assessors, rail experts, and so forth. And the information that's out there floating, the unfortunate part about that is if you look at it in isolation, you start to make judgments, and that's a very risky game, because I think it's invoking fears and concerns that in some cases may not be founded.
And have the have our trains, both single and double, ever operated at full load weight capacity? And have they ever operated like that on an incline?
I'll get Mr. Morgan to explain to you how the weight loading goes and so forth. And to preempt that question, yes, there's been a lot of discussions about crush loads, full loads, suspension loads, and so forth on the vehicle. There's thousands of tests that have been done on those vehicles.
So a little bit about the loading of the vehicles. It's a pretty laborious process to load the vehicles up with sandbags to simulate those 600 people being on the train, and then taking that train, moving it around the system, ensuring that it's working correctly, accelerating as we expect, decelerating, braking as we expect, to verify the overall performance. Do we do that on a subset of the vehicles to make sure that the complete system will work? It's not the same as people in some cases, but essentially we have those sandbags to replicate what we would expect.
So you have used that full load, that full weight load capacity on trains, both single and double, on an incline. Because we're looking at a handover of possibly Q2 2019. There won't be snow anymore. It will be spring. So what I need to understand, and I need to hear from staff, that you are absolutely confident that those trains can operate on an incline with full load weight capacity, and that you've actually tested that.
Starting and stopping on a hill, full load, yes, the system will work.
And you have tested that?
Yes.
And at the last meeting, one of the elements you had said were being monitored, that were critical to revenue service, was RTG's system assurance with the sign-off from the city's safety auditor. I asked at the time what they were. You said there were about 12 left out of a couple of hundred. So I wonder if you could tell us how many of those safety considerations there still are, and what are they?
I'll ask Mr. Louch to just give you a quick overview on the number of documents and the stats on that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So as far as the safety assurance process is concerned, we're almost there. We're trending very well. There's a two-week audit going on right now with the city's safety auditor. And the last element to review and to agree is the ESAC, so it's the engineering safety assurance case. And that's being reviewed this week with the safety auditor. The whole process, we're tracing 25 critical documents, and these are the documents where we have statements of no objection from the city auditor. But the overall process involves about 2,000 documents. And all those documents have been submitted, have been reviewed, are part of the engineering safety case. And so we anticipate in the next week or two, we should have sign-off.
So there will be, at that point, there will be sign-off completely from the city's safety auditor on the full system?
If there are no objections, yes.
Okay. Did we have doors freeze on the trains during the last winter, the severe winter event?
We did have some doors. I wouldn't say freeze, but get stuck. And one of the reasons is because they weren't cycling as much as they should. So repeated opening and closing. So part of the testing process is when we get to a station, we should be opening and closing them on a regular basis to replicate revenue service. The operators wanted to keep the heat in the train, so during some of the colder weeks, they weren't cycling as they should. So then they essentially did get stuck every once in a while. But it wasn't endemic. It was on a case-by-case basis.
So how will we know if we're getting handover in Q2 2019 that when we get the handover, that all of these issues, and there are some issues with winter weather, are not going to be outstanding, that we won't find ourselves next winter with a train that, you know, has panels that come loose or get, you know, is not able to move freely across the track, you know, doors, I think you said, being stuck or not opening. Bit of a nuance there, but how can we get that assurance? And I guess I'm asking Mr. Manconi what the, you know, what is your comfort level and what should be our comfort level that that will happen? Not that I'm wishing for more cold weather, but I'm guessing that between now and Q2 2019, we're not going to have that opportunity.
So I'll start with the doors stuck, freezing. That happens. It happens on the Trillium line. Has happened. Will continue to happen. Doors getting stuck. When we roll out the briefing to Transit Commission, we're going to talk about the top five things that cause service disruption, and holding doors or frozen doors is one of them. In terms of the assurance of the testing and commissioning, it's been 5 years worth of work. And I just want to elaborate a little bit on, for example, the load testing that Mr. Morgan talks about. The one thing I love railroad engineers, but they do not brag. The logistics of doing that testing, they literally load up those trains with the sand. This is industry best practices. They do that full crush load, and they're testing that train nonstop, braking, hills, so forth. And the reason the hill is brought up is because we have that hill going into the tunnel on the Ottawa U end. So it's the test results. Numbers don't lie. Those test results are either pass or fail. There's no in-between, and there's been 5 years of oversight, and when we needed experts, we brought the experts in. The experts are still here, and the other insurance piece that you have is that if the train cannot meet service, it doesn't go out, and they're not paid part of that $4 million service because they're paid by kilometers rolled on a monthly basis. So they're incentivized to make sure that they have the full fleet count that goes out. If a door does jam, which it happens on any system around the world as an example, our operators are trained. That's part of the simulation that's going on right now, how to unjam that door. There's a reset button and so forth. And there's also deployment of their mechanics if they need to.
Thank you. One last question. You mentioned that the Alstom train was used in Moscow and St. Petersburg. Was it the exact model that we are using here?
As I said, the base is similar. Every one of those trains gets adapted for their conditions. They're all customized to the operators, configurations, interiors, exteriors. Your train is unique in that it goes 100 kilometers an hour because you need that for stage two, and it has passed that test, by the way. So there are differences to adapt it to our service need and our winter needs.
Okay, but is it the Alstom Citadis Spirit train that is being used in Moscow and St. Petersburg?
It's the Alstom Citadis. It's not the exact same train, but it's the same components, the same subsystems, and so forth.
So what's the difference with the Spirit?
So the Spirit, the version that we're getting goes up to 100 kilometers an hour, so it's a slightly faster train. You know, there's some adaptation, as John mentioned, to the Ottawa climate. Obviously, the train control system is you know, custom to our operation. On a street running system, you'd use a much simpler train control system. Ours is a much more complex moving block system to be able to move the number of passengers and achieve the headways that we need. Those are the primary differences.
So some differences, certainly. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Councillor Leeper.
Thanks, Chair. Following quickly up on Councillor McKenney's question, is one of the critical differences with respect to our implementation of the Citadis, the gearbox is on the outside of the wheels in our version. Is that a common configuration through this model of train in other jurisdictions?
To the best of my knowledge, yes, it is. And the bogey's design was modified, improved, and the location of the gearbox right now, it's made quite modular. And one of the reasons it's on the outside is so we can swap it out quite easily if need be.
Is it on the outside? So thinking about some of the winter reliability issues, having the gearbox outside, I'm not an engineer, but seems to leave it more vulnerable to snow and ice issues. Are there other winter cities that have the gearbox on the outside in their city's implementation?
I can't answer that. I can definitely find out for you, but I don't have that information right now.
Okay, I'd be interested absolutely to know that. And I do have, again, following up on Councillor McKenney's question, I just took a look at the forecast. We have a lot of above-zero weather. We don't have a lot more snow coming. How will the city know that the city operates in train when there's so many things left to do, will operate in snow when there's so many things left to do, and we don't have any real snow probably coming over the next several weeks?
Well, I guess I disagree. I don't think there's so many things left to do. The trains have operated all winter long in one of the harshest winters you've seen. Many of them, Councillor, as you know, I walk in your ward every night. I've seen them constantly, single trains, double trains, and so forth. As we've said over and over again, on the nine things, the maintenance piece, the winter maintenance piece, where there was lessons learned on that major severe storm, up until then, everything was fine. They've adapted, they're changing, they're contractually required to change. Getting to the 15 double vehicles end-to-end is what we're striving for, and we will get to that. There is a bit of winter left in March. There always is. I've been in public works, so there's always one or two storms. There's still a lot of snow buildup on the right-of-way, and I know there's a big emphasis on snow, but the one that should keep us up at night is freezing rain. That's what loads up your catenary and causes your catenary to come down, and we have not had any of that considering our harsh winter conditions. And then when you move to summer, there's all kinds of challenges for contraction and heaving and so forth. So it's very dynamic systems, not unique to Ottawa. We've seen a lot of winter testing, and we like what we see so far. But there's still some work to do in terms of getting the end-to-end operation, which has been occurring over and over again.
Now, are any of the trains that are currently out on the track, and I get that there are, you know, more trains than ever before, they're running, have any of those trains been accepted for delivery by the city?
So we've gone through, we've started the inspection process to do a kind of a walkthrough of the interiors, check on the performance, so that initial inspection, 33 vehicles been done, but, there's still final decals to be put on the vehicle. There's final kind of customer-facing issues to be cleaned up before they're officially ours.
What kind of documentation exists to tell RTG, in the city's opinion, what remains to be done before we accept the vehicle for delivery?
So those inspections, those walkthroughs generate, a long list of open items deficiencies that we track, that we do a joint inspection with RTG on those vehicles to make sure that they're aware of what our concerns are. All of those things get tracked. Those go into a car history book, which is a volume of tests that are tracked for those vehicles. The car history book has reference to the type tests that are done for the global testing program, but also the individual tests that are done on those vehicles. So that package, in the industry is referred to as a car history book, is available for us to understand the final configuration of the vehicle and to ensure that its state is ready for service. That includes things like the TALAS, the train control safety certificate, the sign-off by Alstom that it's ready to go, our final inspection, the closeout of the punch list items, kind of wrapped up in one document that we use to give ourselves comfort that it's ready for use on the system.
So the items that remain, the documented issues with the trains, is it just decals that remain before we accept it, or what are those issues that remain before we're willing to accept the trains for delivery?
So the delivery of the trains, unlike in other systems where you have a system, accepting delivery to run trains on an existing system. In our case, it's really wrapped up as part of the overall project, as part of the overall handover of the system to the service. RTG is accountable to provide a level of performance to the city. So it's less about, accepting specific individual vehicles, and it's more about accepting handover of the complete integrated system.
But before those vehicles are ready for delivery as part of the overall handover, there are issues that remain to be resolved. what are the issues that remain to be resolved with the cars? We heard about, you know, some final livery, I guess, but what else is there?
So, Mr. Mayor, the project agreement is very specific. It says under the definition of the RSA and how they can get to substantial completion, there can only be what is referred to as minor deficiencies. And so RTG can put in front of us they can put their list in front of us. We will agree or not agree to it being a minor deficiency. It's defined. And what it basically says is it cannot impede the successful use of the system as per the project agreement. So when you hear about decals and when you hear about minor things, those are it can only be very minor things, no different than when you buy your house and you move in with the blue tape and you just put, you know, here's the drywall that's nicked and so forth. That's the stage we're in. And what's their incentive? Money. They don't get their money until they get through the 12 consecutive days.
So is it still, sorry, are there non-minor issues remaining with the vehicles? And can you characterize what those non-minor issues are that remain?
We haven't finalized the list. There's nothing major outstanding on the vehicle, save and except on a few of them. There's an issue with a power surge protector issue, which they're looking at, which they've isolated, and they're looking at the retrofit for that. That's the only thing that I would consider as anything of significance. The rest are all minor things that we would agree that they could go into service that wouldn't compromise the safe, reliable, consistent application of that service.
Is the TALIS communications system installed on all of the trains and signed off on by TALIS?
Installed on all the trains, and I had the metric. It was 24. Mr. Lausch can speak to the metrics on that, but it is on every train.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, the TALIS CBTC system is installed on all 34 vehicles.
And has TALIS signed off on that?
TALIS, yes. TALIS has provided safety certificates for 24 of the vehicles. That doesn't mean that the other vehicles aren't operating. They are operating. But what it means is the 24 certified vehicles right now are being operated by OCT drivers, and OLRTC drivers are operating the additional 10. We expect to have another 5 certified by Friday, and then the last 5 by next week. And it's strictly a function of access to the track to carry out the dynamic PICO, a dynamic post-installation checkout test and paperwork.
Okay. Are the trains coupling properly? My understanding is that there's levels of automation of the coupling process. It can be semi-automatic, it can be manual, it can be fully automatic. We're seeking trains that have fully automatic coupling. Is that working?
Again, obviously there's some information out there. They were not working fine before. They are working fine now, and I'll give Mr. Lausch an opportunity to tell you what's going on.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As Mr. Manconi says, yes, they are working. We've been doing coupling tests in the yard for the last several weeks. We have we did some tests last night. We have a coupled vehicle out there today. The issue, there's no issues whatsoever with mechanical coupling. There were some issues just with some instrumentation, just making sure that one cab talks to the other, and that's been rectified.
Okay. One of the things I think Mr. Manconi raised earlier was, you know, there's a number of tests that are occurring, testing, commissioning, and training. OC Transpo is training its drivers. We're testing the mechanics on the trains. We're testing the communication system overall. Who is overseeing all of these tests to make sure that no one is stepping on each other's toes? Who has the overall view of that?
We have an integrated team of from the rail office, from Mr. Morgan's area, and I've also brought in the independent experts that come in and challenge us. And Mr. Lausch has a comprehensive testing and commissioning team.
Okay. Is it the city's role? Like, did we agree beforehand that we were going to keep track of all the various different tests, or should that work be RTG's?
If you're a purist in P3s, you basically wait for the keys to be given to you. I brought forward a proposal to Mr. Kanellakis 2 years ago when I got handed this mandate, and he supported me unequivocally, and I brought in the experts that I mentioned earlier on, and I could go on and on with a long list of people that we've brought in, and we wanted extra oversight, and we wanted to make sure that we shared with you and you had clear line of sight as to where we were with the project every step of the way. So we've gone above and beyond what's required, and I will give Mr. Lausch credit. Technically speaking, he could tell us to just wait for the keys to be delivered. He has not done that under his leadership. He has worked with us and participated in those oversight meetings and the assessments and in the various and the hundreds of meetings that we've done in terms of looking at where we are with the project.
Is that a cost to the city in terms of those personnel that we're going to be able to recover?
The proactive piece is ours. The piece that post-delay, we are tracking every single element.
Why did you take that decision, John? If you could just run through that again. Sorry, Mr. Mancone.
Because when I did the research on how complicated this project was, I believed that we needed to bring in some extra railroad expertise from people that have bought cars, built systems, implemented systems, and hence the decision to bring those people in to get that independent view and support and advice and oversight.
Were there concerns that you had at the time?
It's just the right thing to do.
Okay. I'll follow up again on one of Councillor McKenney's questions with respect to the testing under load. We have a 12-day testing period. My understanding is that the 6 of those days have to be flawless, and they have to be done under, I think, what the industry calls like its AW3 standard. So we have to test the trains fully loaded with, is it 6 people per square meter standing or something like that? Are we going to insist that the train meet that AW3 standard before we accept the handover of the system?
Councillor, respectfully, that is not how that system is set up. It's 12 days near flawless.
Okay.
AW3, we're throwing out technical terms here again. Yes, that's part of the load testing that Mr. Morgan talked about. And as I've said over and over again, we are going to ensure we get everything that we are required under the project agreement to provide the safe, reliable system that's required. But to be clear, they're required to go into, after they've achieved substantial completion, that means everything is done, then they can go into the 12 days of consecutive running, and they have to be near perfect on every single one of those, otherwise the clock resets.
So 12 flawless or near flawless days?
Correct. All the systems and major subsystems working.
Bear with me a moment. At Saint-Laurent, there's some work remaining to be done on the ventilation system. Is that system certified to handle 2 trains in the station at a time?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The only outstanding work at Saint-Laurent, we have to do what we call an FDAS test, which is basically where you simulate a fire in a vehicle, and you have to make sure that communicates with the train control system. That is the last remaining test we have to do before we get a CCL and an ECL, which is construction conformance letter and design conformance letter. And then to answer your question, yes, it will be certified for 2 vehicles.
Okay. Those are my questions for the time being. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Dudas, please.
Thank you very much for the presentation and the update. I do have a couple of questions in respect to some of the logistics. I'm pleased to see that the $1 million penalty will be enforced. I am curious, though, I know the city has been tracking and tallying up the costs in terms of this impact and the previous delays, and I'm wondering where we are right now and what our process is going forward, knowing that we're still waiting for a new date for delivery.
The last update that the treasurer issued was in December. It was $25 million at that point, and then we've simply been keeping the monthly costs rolling. I don't have that up-to-date number for you. We can endeavor. I'm just looking at the treasurer for advice on that one.
The update went in December, but it actually covered all the way till March 31st. So once we get past March 31st, so then we'll start adding on the cost. But don't forget that whole analysis we did showed that the additional costs you have savings or expenditures you're not going to make, which offset those. Plus, we have, through the project agreement, we have an ability to recover for lane closures, which basically offsets your detour costs.
Okay, so we'll be continuing to tally that up, and there'll be more information provided potentially at next FEDCO or FEDCO after?
I would imagine we will wait until after the March 31st date, and then really for us to do our analysis, what we need is that the date when it's being handed over so we can do the cost implications up to that particular date. So as soon as we have a date, we'll do some more work on this and provide an update to council.
Okay. And that leads into my next question, and then how will we as council and the public, but through council, be kept in the loop in respect to a new date being set? What's next steps? Because we obviously need to be aware of every detail going forward. This is such an important project, and it's important to our constituents.
Yes, absolutely. It's a good question. We're going to do our due diligence once we receive a new date from RTG, and then we'll provide the updates. I look to the mayor, whether it's through FEDCO or whether it's a memo in terms of the new update, but the plan is to obviously communicate that to you and to our customers.
And I just, it's going to be a realistic date, right? Because, I mean, I'm a huge fan of project management. I know that deadlines need to be in place, and I love deadlines, but I want to make sure that we're setting something that's realistic that we as a city can look towards and our residents can actually anticipate will be the real date.
I agree 100% with that.
Okay. I also I was a little disappointed, and I understand the nuances in respect to not being able to enact some of the bus route changes that were set out in the 2019 budget. As a rider, as a transit rider, knowing that a lot of my constituents were hoping to have some of those changes. So I am going to ask, though, about some of the detours that are in place, in specifically the 174 detour. I know that there's some aspects about that that make it a little difficult. Is there any way that we can remove that detour or any of the other ones, knowing that we are leading up at least to the launch of LRT?
Councillor, yourself, Councillor Blake, Councillor Tierney have all asked me about that detour, and they've begged me to pull that one out. If I could, I would. It's a major safety issue. We've consulted with MTO. What I have said is I've instructed Phil Landry, who is going to be unpacking all those detours, that be the first one. So that's on the work plan, because we know that's the one that from a benefit to your communities is significant.
Thank you. The melting equipment, I can't recall the technical term for it. Who is paying for that? Who owns that? Is it?
So thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's our RTG's responsibility.
Okay. And your cost?
And our cost.
Awesome. Good. And I guess I just, you know, just to say, because I see I have a moment on the clock, you know, as a transit rider, I am disappointed because I'm very, very eager to get on that train. Like, I cannot wait for that train to go, and I'm very much looking forward to having discussions about Stage 2 because, you know, we won't really see the benefits in the East End until we have that second stage of LRT. But I understand completely from a taxpayer perspective, we can't accept something that doesn't meet our operational and testing standards. So I thank you very much for your due diligence, Mr. Manconi and city staff, in respect to making sure that we're not accepting something that doesn't meet our standards. I am looking forward to a realistic date being set and that we have an effective communication going forward so we know all the details as we proceed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Menard, please.
Thanks very much, Mayor, and thank you for your presentation. The word confidence has been used a lot throughout this process and in this room today. So I've heard from RTG, we're saying we're confident on Q2 of 2019. I've heard from other staff that we're confident for the calendar year of 2019, before the end of the calendar year of 2019. You know, and our mayor has been clear previously on great confidence the city could take control by the end of March. So what would you say are the main reasons, the core reasons between those pronouncements previously and where we are today about why we failed to deliver the system as of March 31st? And that's a question either to Mr. McConaughey or Mr. Locke.
So, Councillor, I don't know which of my staff are telling you they look to the end of the year, because I don't know how anybody would do that without having the detailed information that we don't have yet from RTG. So to make that forecast, you know, you can check my track record. I'm very, very cautious in giving out dates and specifics, to the point that I know it annoys some of you because you want a date, and I'm trying to ensure that we manage expectations. So I just caution if anybody from my team is telling you that it's the end of the year. I need to see the information. What gives me confidence is what I've said today, that things are trending in the right direction. If Mr. Lausch and his team continue to do what we've seen in the last couple of weeks, and we get that list down to just the vehicles, and we get vehicles going from Tunney's to Blair, to the point that the public says, okay, enough, we've seen it many, 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 many days, day after day, the confidence level will be there. And confidence gets built with the information coming in and positive test results. And like I reported, I'm difficult on RTG when I need to, but I'm also very fair and equitable when they've performed. In the last couple of weeks, they've performed some very impressive things, and the experts are right. This stuff comes in big chunks towards the end, like any major system rollout.
Okay, that's fine. But what are the main reasons that we failed to deliver the system this time? What are the core reasons why?
I don't like the word fail. I'm trying to be positive here. I think I've been clear from the get-go. They have not met the requirements of the project agreement, and we're holding them accountable to it.
But what are the reasons for that? Why didn't they meet it? What changed between then and now is what I'm trying to get at.
They have not achieved what's required in the project agreement, which is... they have not achieved substantial completion. That's the first piece. And substantial completion is a fancy term for all of the construction work. All the occupancy permits are done. There can only be very, very minor things left. So they've not achieved that. They don't believe they can achieve that in the timeline required leading up to RSA. So without substantial completion, you cannot move to the revenue service availability. And I've shared those steps with you in the previous presentations, and I'm happy to walk you through it.
Okay. Obviously, I'm looking for more specifics where you can. Can you let me know if these statements are true or not at any point during the testing? Vehicles are currently unreliable to the point that it has not been demonstrated that operations can be sustained during a major winter weather event. Is that true right now?
Right now, no.
Was it true a week ago or 2 weeks ago?
There was periods that the vehicles were challenged because of the track conditions, as I've said.
Okay, and we haven't had a major winter weather event in the last couple of weeks or week and a half, I guess. So are panels coming loose and breaking on light rail vehicles, plural, not one light rail vehicle, but plural vehicles, due to snow building up on the vehicles?
We had some buildup on that event, like I said in my presentation, and it pushed a couple of the panels out. There was one in a windstorm, by the way, in terms of other things. There was a panel that came off during a windstorm that was a latch that was not properly engaged.
Okay, so how many vehicles would you say have had panels fly off?
So there's been no panels flying off, as Mr. Manconi said. The only time that a panel actually came off, that was last summer during the tornado. And that was because of a latch that wasn't fastened tight enough. That's since been addressed.
Okay.
As far as the winter event is concerned, there was one panel that came off. It didn't fly off. It was pushed out slightly because of the ingress of snow underneath. And then as it approached one of the stations, it clipped the side of the platform and it broke.
Okay, and you're saying that these things haven't occurred in the last couple of weeks?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Can you tell me if this statement is true? For both brakes and the bogies, both the underframe of the rail car that holds the wheels, they freeze up if the vehicle sits for any amount of time. Was that occurring?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The answer is no. The vehicles are designed, there's actually a skirt that protects the brakes and the bogies. We're talking about the one occasion where the vehicle was stuck in the snow, and that's where we had a buildup of snow in the bogey, and it did freeze the gearbox and the brake.
Okay, so the gearbox did freeze for a period of time. Okay,
Sorry. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So just given that, I mean, it seems like the news report that came out was accurate in many instances. That's what it seems like to me based on those answers. There may have been a couple of things where there are questions around it, but on those answers, it seems like that was fairly accurate. Stage 1 and Stage 2 are intimately linked because we've purchased 38 more of these exact vehicles for the extension, is my understanding. That was done in 2016, correct? We've purchased, though, or we made the memorandum of understanding to purchase the additional 38. Have we actually given over the money for that, or we just have a memorandum to say we're going to purchase those vehicles?
No, we've the purchase order was signed. They've actually started building those vehicles.
Okay, so did we make that decision to purchase those vehicles before testing the first tranche of vehicles that we had?
No.
Okay, and so when was the decision made? 2016?
I don't have the exact date, but I believe it's 2016, yes.
Okay, so we've been testing those other vehicles for a long period of time before 2016 then. If you had the chance to do it over again with the vehicles that we purchased, would you wait to potentially see what the testing produced for some vehicles and look at other vehicles that exist out there, given that my understanding is the Alstom, the Spirit, is the first in North America. It may be in other places, but the Spirit is the first in North America in Ottawa.
No, and I'll tell you why. I think we're painting this picture that we have an issue with Alstom Spirit. You know what? I have peers right now that are envious of the position you're in because you have a full fleet that's about to be launched, and other jurisdictions have been waiting a very long time. That doesn't make it any easier on our customers or you. I understand that, Councillor. But these reports that are out floating about staff holding RTG accountable for an incident that occurred, you're getting state-of-the-art vehicles. They will not be put into service until they're completely tested and meet the every single standard that we put out there. You've had independent assessment from the National Research Council. So if we want to talk to those scientists and those lab technicians and so forth about the minus 40, they've been used elsewhere in the world. And we're confident that we're getting very good vehicles. And purchasing rail vehicles and putting them into service is a complicated task. And we have a complicated system with some of the amenities that have never been done before in terms of the doors and so forth and everything else. And they're performing very, very well on many, many, many fronts.
Would you say it was a risk to purchase these types of vehicles? There was an inflated risk versus other vehicles that existed that have been in service in Canada and in cold weather?
The beauty of the P3 contract that you signed is you actually do not own the vehicle risk. RTG has the contract with Alstom. You are not accountable for the vehicles. That was a conscious decision that we did. And unlike other jurisdictions where you're building the system and then you're procuring the vehicles, you have double risks. The risks are all with Mr. Lausch. He has to put those vehicles into service, and he gets the financial penalties and so forth. Yes, there's delays to us and our customers, but the financial risk, if you had done a conventional procurement model, you'd be on the hook for all those issues that they're dealing with right now, and you'd be struggling through it and taking more time and money and resources. And so the procurement team that put that first P3 together did what other jurisdictions now wish they had done, because there's other jurisdictions, you can go and look, they're waiting for their vehicles, and they're well beyond a year waiting for vehicles.
So if some of these vehicles aren't working properly for us at the end of the day, they're not getting rid of those deficiencies that we want, we can return them and RTG's on the hook for paying for those? Is that they get returned, or what happens to the vehicles if they're not sufficient?
They have to have enough vehicles to provide that service count that I told you about. They don't get their monthly $4 million payment. There's penalties associated with not just the vehicles, but escalators and elevators, any subsystem that isn't working. And, yeah, they're required to put vehicles out there. And they also have the Stage 2 order vehicle that's coming online, so they can also backstop that in the interim for Stage 1 if they want to.
Okay. And on the process, I think there's been a fair amount of a lack of information sometimes coming out to councillors and the public. And so I think some of the problem that we have is that we're not communicating enough during this period of time to both councillors and the public on these issues. And so I guess, Mr. Lauck, this question is for you. I think it's clear council and the public want more information until service launch. So will you commit here today to truthful weekly information, including deficiencies remaining every single week so that council gets that councillors get that update and the public gets that update?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to comment on that just for, because before Mr. Lausch provides an answer, just to, I can understand council being concerned because they're hearing about, items or issues that come up in the media and other sources that come through about the trains, before it was about the construction, the civil engineering around the sites. I totally understand your angst because you're hearing it and there's no context for you to process what that means in relation to the overall project. And I like to say that we are in testing commissioning. That is the point of identifying problems and creating issues logs and fixing them. And we can get, we're sitting there every week. We have a weekly meeting with the RTG group and the executive committee of the constructor, and we're dealing with this. I'm dealing with it daily. I'm in these conversations. And we don't focus on the individual issues that come up over the logs because those things are supposed to happen. There's no, I want to debunk the myth that a train is constructed and then dropped on a track and it works perfectly. You're basically building and you're taking ownership of autonomous vehicles. We are leading edge in the sense that we're building vehicles that are controlled by computers, even though we have an operator on board. They're very complex, which you know, which Mr. Manconi and Mr. Lausch has talked about. But I think that the first of all, the belief that individual issues that come up on the issues log during the testing, that's normal. That's what's supposed to happen. That is part of the process of any kind of construction or infrastructure project. And we don't react to that because what council has done in their governance role is told us what they want. We issued a contract telling us what we want as a city. Mr. Lausch has a responsibility to tell us how to do that and how to develop it, and the contract was set up that way to get that. I don't get involved in, quite frankly, individual issues unless I see that they're trending towards system-wide, broader problems. That's the issue. If the issues that are going on the log sheet that have been identified are issues that are seeing that we have systemic issues or system-wide issues or things totally wrong with all the train sets, that's a different discussion with our governing body, which is council. But we're not seeing that. We're seeing individual issues that sometimes are collective and they fix them, but they're fixing them as they go. And we're now at a point where we have fewer and fewer issues as we get closer to launch, which is what expected. So the notion that, and I'm not sure if that was a deliberate use of the word truthful in terms of the question. We've always been truthful. I think we have a different perception in terms of what's relevant to the final outcome that you want versus what an individual councillor or member of the public will want. So I understand when you hear that, you go, wow, what's happening? But I can assure you that we look at these things, we're paying attention to all of them, and we're monitoring it against the standard of, is this going to impact what council has asked for to deliver? And our belief is absolutely not, because we are tracking it. The independent assessment team we brought in is on top of all the issues. We're doing more governance and oversight than we were required to do. Mr. Lausch has been totally cooperative in terms of opening up everything he has to show us those things. And we are very confident that those trains, because they are running in other jurisdictions all over the world, as Mr. Manconi showed in the presentation, those trains will be running. The beauty of it is, and I've said this to my team, can you imagine where council would be right now and staff if we were doing a design build ourselves and we were a year late and we were funding everything they've had to fund for the last 13 months? Can you imagine they're paying for all the construction costs and all the staff that are on that whole line? They're paying for all the penalties. They're paying for all the financing. We haven't paid them since February of 2018, not a dollar. If we were in their boat and we didn't do a P3, we would be spending hundreds of millions of dollars in the last year to this organization, to our suppliers and staff and all the construction people. We were building ourselves. And I can tell you, I don't think it'd be a very happy scene here. That entire risk has been pushed over to RTG. That's the way the contract was designed. And they've been financing this project for over a year on their own dime. That's the protection that our taxpayers have. That's the value of the money our taxpayers have. And that's one of the beauties of having a contract like this. There's some compromise, of course, because, yeah, we don't have total control of everything because we've asked them to build it for us. We've hired a general contractor to build it. But I can assure you that we have been very forthcoming with any issues, and it's a matter of perspective, but the issues that we believe are relevant for council from a governance perspective.
And I appreciate that thorough answer. I really do. But I guess at this point, there's a huge thirst for information from councillors, the public, and others, that we get more information about this as we move along. So I'm asking for a commitment from Mr. Lauk and you folks here that we get, and I say truthful because, look, we've had three deadlines pass when we said there's confidence here, we're going to deliver. We have it. So that's what I mean when I say it. Can we get that? Can you make that commitment here today?
Well, it's a question of what level of information council needs as we proceed forward. And I'm not, you know, you're reacting to my answer, but I'm not saying I don't want to give you information. It's if you have information that, I don't know, another bogey froze because it's going to be 22 below tomorrow, what do you do about it?
It's better that we hear it than
right, Councillor Menard, your time is up. So
can we get a commitment, Mr. Mayor? I have a question. I haven't heard an answer.
Mr. Mayor, our commitment is that as information comes up that's relevant to the project and the receiving the project, we will provide council, as we've been directed to do by council, and we'll come back to FEDCO and provide our updates at the calling of the chair of the committee. So that's where we provide our information. We've been directed by council in terms of how we provide information. We're living up to that. And if council wants to change that direction through a vote here and ultimately a council, staff will comply.
Thank you. Councillor Tierney.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. And thank you very much, John. I know I keep bringing up time and time again that ramp, and I guess our constant pining and whining has got it to the top of the deck, so I'm very happy about that. Also, you mentioned the cancellations, and I did highlight that a couple of weeks ago in a question, and you were brutally honest, and that quote was used for quite a while, and I can attest to those cancellations are being reduced. I don't think they're quite at the point where I'm comfortable yet. Is there still effort taking place right now to get those cancellations reduced?
Yes, we're continuing. I can't guarantee that we'll get down to zero, but like I said, we had a better week this week, and just to share with everyone, there are routes being canceled, some of which we've never canceled in the past, and I know your ward, because you made it loud and clear to me, it's never been canceled, and so you've had some challenges in your ward.
Great, thank you for that. So I'll keep an eye on that. We're talking about, the end of the second quarter, giving a date. I think a lot of the concern that we've seen is, we do the math, simple math, you need those 12 days, we're doing the countdown. I'm thinking worst-case scenario, the end of the second quarter. So if I count back, are we going to start seeing those 12 days starting early in that second quarter, or are you going to hold off to those last 12 days? Because I think that people want to see momentum. And I certainly see the trains running in and out of Blair Station, coupled, uncoupled, not to the frequency I'm excited about yet, but I think people need those visuals to be able to say, yeah, this actually works. So when would you anticipate that 12 days of testing taking place? Would it be at the beginning, halfway through, at the end? Because if it's at the end, I don't want to be sitting back here, 3 weeks before the deadline and having to go through this whole rigmarole again.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So, as I said earlier, in terms of giving a date, what we want to have is we want to have 10 to 14 days of consistent running single, double vehicles. Then the countdown starts. We have the project agreement is very prescriptive in terms of the notices that we have to give and then the opinion periods allocated to the independent certifier in the city. Once we issue the substantial completion notice, there's a 10-day opinion period, and then we start trial running. And that trial running, as we've noted, is 12 days. At the end of that trial running, we can have revenue service. So if you can work backwards from there. Obviously, it's in our best interest to do this as quickly as possible, and that's why this next 2 weeks will be very telling.
Great. Well, on that, I'm hoping we see it in March or April and not in May and June when that starts. It would certainly give more to our clientele that want to ride this thing. I tell you, people are excited about it. John, the cell phone capabilities through the tunnels, are those repeaters in place? Will people have access to cell service in the tunnels on day one?
So the cell connectivity from end to end is in place. I think there's some final commissioning. I just look to Peter Lausch on that one. But yeah, the great news is one of the first systems to have full cellular connectivity throughout the tunnel in Canada.
Great, thank you. So I think a lot of the questions today were around the Spirit brand or the Spirit model of the vehicle. And I think it's been repeated a few times, but I just want to say it's kind of like a car, right? Like you want air, power windows, ashtray, you know, leather seats, turbo. Is that what we're talking about here with these trains? We're not talking this as some kind of prototype. The base model is the same.
Exactly. Your Toyota Corolla that you may buy overseas is different than the one you're going to buy here. So it's been adapted for that.
So on that note, is there any Citadel models that can achieve 100 kilometers an hour right now?
Yes, it's the Alstom, if you look it up on the internet, it's the tram train next generation vehicle.
Okay, this is comforting, and I think it's loud and clear. This is just a different brand, different model. That being said, I did learn a lot in the presentation today, and this is something I think we really have to give to our constituents. These are things I'm not reading in the media, and I would like to deliver some of this information to our constituency, and it's kind of to, you know, Councillor Menard's point. It'd be great to have something that we can provide in our e-blasts, by Facebook, by Twitter, that we can push out that isn't a graphical representation, something in a text format, maybe some graphics as well. Is that something that, is that, John, your shop that would do, it would be RTG?
In March, there's the Transit Commission. There is a detailed report on all those customer-facing elements, and you as councillors will get all sorts of documentation in various forms and formats that you can push out because the customers want to know about how do I ride it, what are the elements and sub-elements and so forth, yes.
Great. In French and English, obviously, it goes without saying.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
Merci. Thank you, Councillor Tierney. Councillor Deans.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for your presentation today. I have to admit to being a little confounded about the change in tone and confidence level from last month to this month, and especially with the backdrop of the media report last week that said an internal memo said that vehicles are currently unreliable to the point that it has not been demonstrated that operations can be sustained during a winter weather event. So is that a mythical memo, or did that memo actually exist?
Mr. Chair, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a memo. I would love to get a copy of it, and I would love to sit down with the employee that provided it so that context can be given that. Somebody has leaked something to the media. I don't even know if it's a we issue, as Mr. Kanellakis said, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of pages of documentation, all the testing protocols. So this memo or whatever the document is, I don't know what it is. I cannot comment on it.
Issue a daily report, of what's happening out there on the tracks, the testing, all of the stuff. Is there an internal daily report memo?
There are many daily reports across many systems and subsystems.
And does one of those reports indicate that the system is not currently reliable in winter conditions?
I've not seen what you're quoting, Councillor.
You have a copy, Councillor? You can provide.
I don't have a copy. I just read it in the media, and I would like to know if there's an internal report that said that last week. How did the confidence level change this week so that... here's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that we're going to take this system sometime in June when the flowers are blooming and that we don't have any way of testing a winter condition in June, and we accept this and we end up with a three-season service, and then next winter it's not reliable. So how do we get the confidence that it's going to work in a winter condition if we accept it in June and right now even your own internal memos say it's not reliable?
So again, we've been testing the vehicles all winter long, and as I've said in the presentation, the incident of that vehicle being stuck was not related to the vehicle, it wasn't related to the bogies, it wasn't related to the brakes, it wasn't related to the panel, it was related to the track not being cleared. They had a challenge with the winter clearing operations, they responded to that. We have the independent assessment team and our experts that have run winter operations far more complicated than what we do, and they're overseeing the winter plan, they're overseeing the equipment, they're overseeing how they're going to test the winter maintenance equipment. And so we've run vehicles all winter long. We saw that major storm. We saw all the other storms that everybody's been through, and the vehicles have operated through those things. And so that builds the confidence on that. And let's be clear, we've said they've had a very productive 2 weeks, but your insurance policy council is your P3 agreement, because here are the hurdles they need to clear before we give them the go-ahead. They have to reach substantial completion, which means everything is done. The only thing that can be outstanding are minor issues. No different than your own house when you buy a new house. Then we have 10 to 15 days to review it as city staff to make sure we agree with everything. Then they have to go through, and that's why they've agreed to the practice plan, which will be an early indicator. And then they can go to RSA. So they have to get through all those hurdles, safety auditor review, and so forth. So there's a lot of hurdles to go through. And what I'm simply reporting on today, you know, counselors have asked for what are the facts. They had a really good couple of weeks. And of 9 major issues, a lot of them are trending very well. I didn't say they're all done. And the confidence level that I will get to answer your question is, if Mr. Lausch is successful in clearing up all those other 8 things and he's left with the vehicles and runtime on the track, that builds the confidence. But that's why we've also, with the city manager, his direction is we're not going to agree to a new date until we see the line of path as to how we get to that new RSA.
And Mr. Mayor, I also like to say that, you know, the notion that that we're coming to the conclusion, or media or people have come to the conclusion, the system's unreliable because of, I don't know what the report is or what the log is or what it is that the reporter has. Again, it's context. One person, if that's the case, made a comment about the reliability of the system based on what?
So the front of the vehicles has a coupler cover on it. That coupler cover needs to be manually removed using a tool. So to couple two vehicles together, if you had two singles and the covers are on both ends, you need to get, you know, a maintainer down onto the track to remove those coupler covers and set the vehicle up for coupling. So coupling on this system, you know, because it's driver-based, because you need to get down on the ground and actually take off the covers, the idea that it's fully automatic coupling is not really, you know, true as compared to a driverless system where you actually do, remotely from a computer, command and control automatic coupling.
So could we, like, easily daily couple the vehicles for peak time runs and then uncouple them for off-peak, or is this much more laborious?
No, that's a great question, Mr. Mayor. This is where the experts come in. If you run railroads, don't decouple trains. You decouple trains, your connection gets broken, and that's where your risk occurs. And so we're going to have our double trains coupled 99.9% of the time. We're not getting into decoupling. Mr. Lausch has a requirement to show that we can decouple if we choose to, or if he has to split a train to get service back up and running and so forth. But again, that's why you bring in the experts, and this issue of the coupling, they needed to prove that the coupling works and all the systems talk to each other. And as we've talked about earlier on, there were some challenges with that. That's been rectified.
And when we couple these trains, can the front end of the train talk to the back end of the train on all of them?
Absolutely. That's the rigorous testing that CBTC has been going through. That's the train that's out there today. That's exactly what it's doing. That's what that photo was doing.
Okay, and Mr. Manconi, do you have any concerns at all with any part of the system that could lead to a delay in headways because of the operations?
Until we get to that final testing, I can't answer that. What I can tell you, it's done the end-to-end total runtime, so it's 23 minutes and change from one end to the other, with the door frequency opening up between the 20 and 30 seconds at each station doing the dwell time.
Is that with trains running in both directions? Like, I heard a question earlier about the Saint Laurent Tunnel. Can today two trains go in either direction, go through that tunnel at the same time without holding up a headway?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And through the whole system, there's no issue with trains running in both directions creating a delay in a
experts. But to date, we've seen no challenges with multiple trains running end to end.
Okay, I'm wondering about the bus drivers that keep being told that they're not going to have a job, and now we need them for a more extended period of time.
No, those bus drivers, I give them full credit. They're sticking with us. They know we have been clear with them in the future. If we do hire more drivers through retirees and so forth, it's good for them to have a really good track record, attendance and performance and so forth. So we are not losing drivers. It is a difficult market to recruit new drivers. There's a shortage of drivers in the industry as a whole. And for those that are getting displaced, we have great working relationships going on right now with STO, Kingston, Toronto, and Montreal. For those bilingual communities, if we have bilingual drivers that get let go, we're going to transition them over if they want to do that. And for the other unilingual operations, we're letting them know that there's going to be opportunities for them. So we're taking care of them. They've been taking care of us and our customers.
Thank you for that. I just have a couple questions for Mr. Lausch. Mr. Lausch, you sat in front of committee last month and told us you had a high degree of confidence in March 31st. So based on that, why should we have a high degree of confidence in you telling us that it would, the RSA date would be by the end of Q2?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As I said, my level of confidence was predicated on fleet availability. I was always quite confident with everything, you know, anything construction related, safety assurance, that was well under control. As Mr. Manconi showed, just the last week or so, where we've had about almost 18,000 kilometers, 700 hours, we've showed that consistency. We're building on that now. So since early last week, we've consistently been getting vehicles out. They stay on the line. Our supplier, Alstom, has stepped up. We have in-situ vehicle techs keeping them on the line, so we're not troubleshooting in the yard anymore. If there is an issue, we're troubleshooting on the line at the station, so keeping the vehicles going. So that in itself has helped my confidence, because we're keeping the vehicles on the track, and that's key. That's key for on-the-job training. That's key for getting kilometers.
Is that the whole track or just loops?
That's the whole track.
Okay.
Yeah, we've been testing end-to-end for a long time, but the running that we've been doing the last week, that's completely end-to-end, full loop, and as Mr. Manconi said, simulating a full run, 23 and a half minutes, stopping at each station, opening and closing all the doors.
Just wanted to ask you about the subcontractors that are here. Obviously, these delays are causing some financial stress. Have any of the subcontractors left for lack of payment?
No, not to my knowledge. And we've got a good crew of subcontractors. The Ottawa market has been very, very good, electrical, mechanical, construction, and so forth. So, no, they've stuck with us.
Okay, so you have no worries that people that are needed to deliver this RSA down the road are going to leave the project?
No, not at all. The key subcontractors, Alstom, Thales, some of the electrical and mechanical subcontractors here in Ottawa, they've formed a team, and they have a commitment, and they want to see this through.
Okay, thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you. Councillor Cavanaugh.
Thanks for the information, and thanks to my colleagues for many good questions on this subject already. One of your comments earlier was that you've been accused of abandoning OC Transpo riders, and you say that that's a bit harsh. But I'm going to tell you that the OC Transpo riders are feeling abandoned because I'm hearing loud and clear that, you know, the changes that were made to the schedules back on September 2nd were pretty harsh on them. They were done in anticipation. It was always tied in with this project. And of course, this has been delayed. And I really appreciate the fact that you're now realizing that waiting to find out a date. And it's really hard on them. This is something that they rely on daily. And at this point, we don't have any answers. I want to know, in terms of the handover date, what kind of lag do we have here in terms of where we can say you can get on your bus and go to Bayshore? When you get your handover date, are you going to give us a date fairly quickly in terms of this is now our date of when we're going to start the schedule? I want to get an idea to what I can tell people.
Yes, certainly what we've articulated for the last year or so now, the plan is once they achieve RSA, so they flip it over to us, we need a couple of weeks to do some final testing and orientation and so forth. So we've always said within a month of that RSA date, we would launch. The overlay that I'm now putting onto it, if you approve the $5 million expansion, I'm going to get the when do those routes kick in so that you each individual counselor has an update on when their route enhancements would occur.
Based on this delay, you've already talked about that it's very difficult to start those ahead of time. But if this delay goes even further, I'm going to have to ask, is this possible to start those routes before this actually comes into place?
Well, Councillor, I'm not seeing anything right now that says it's going to go beyond Q2 based on what we've heard, but part of the reason why I want to see their line of sight as to what date they're giving us is for exactly that reason. I know he's probably not going to publicly comment today, but Mr. Lausch gets reminded by me every single day that I have 23 councillors, I have 3,000 employees, and we have 1 million residents that depend on this transit system, and they've gone through 5 years of pain, and it has to come to an end, to a successful end for everyone. And so he wants to get it up and running as quickly as we can. I do too. And so let me see what we get on this new RSA date. We are overlaying everything that you've just said in there because, you know, I don't want to talk about beyond Q2 2019 because that's nothing that I see there right now.
Use the LRT. This is to do with routes that are right in their own neighborhood, and they're very, very important to them, and they've been affected. My next question is in regards to the biggest part of the holdback. I was going by the stations this morning, looking at them, trying to fix.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So as Mr. Manconi showed in his slide, in terms of the stations are all occupancy ready. With the stations aren't the holdup. The issue right now, as I mentioned, is just consistent fleet availability and consistent and reliable running of the vehicles. And we're definitely converging in that direction.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Eglin.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not going to lie, I'm not happy about another delay, and I'm looking at you, Mr. Lausch, when I say that. You made some representations to us last time and left us to believe that the train would be turned over very soon. Having said that, it's kind of interesting that if we go back to the very beginning and look at when the train was supposed to be turned over in September, we would not have had, I'm going to use the term opportunity in quotes, to see the potential issues around the winter storm that we experienced. We would have had a service in, or train in service rather, with real live passengers, not sandbags, that we would have had to have dealt with. So in a weird kind of way, some of the delays have assisted us. I try and be a half glass full kind of guy, and in a weird kind of way, this has given some opportunity to have further discussion and to address concerns before we have a real live working system. I have a number of questions, though, around that. And before I go there, sitting here today is a little bit like watching our staff shadow boxing. They're being asked to respond to allegations from an unknown document from an unnamed source who performs we don't know what role in the LRT project. And that's difficult to do. And having said that, I think the information that you provide us today in the slideshow will be very helpful, and I was happy to see you've shared it with us already. So to Councillor Tierney's point, we can get some of that information out to the residents so there is a counterbalance to the stories that are out there floating around as to what the situation is from the city's perspective. So I thank you for that. I still don't think we have the full story. We still don't have an end date. We still don't know when the train's going to be turned over, but it seems that we're making some progress in getting there. So one of the questions I wanted to ask was, there have been a number of councillors who have raised the issue about modifications to the train, and one of the questions was, well, the gearbox is on the outside of the train, and the question was, you know, do we see that in other winter-challenged climates? And so the question I have for you, Mr. Manconi, is you raised some of the results. Was the train that was tested, did that have the gearbox on the outside of the train?
Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. It's been a long day so far.
It's completely protected. And to answer your question, when we were doing the climatic chamber test at the NRC, we were cycling, and the gearbox was working. The only reason we had this one-off with the gearbox was because we had a train stuck in the snow for 3 days, no power, no heat. So the same way as if in, you know.
So I guess the question I'm asking is, the train that you test it is a train with the modifications that we now see out on the tracks?
Correct.
And were there representations or recommendations from the NRC?
Lots. I mean, with any testing, you get that feedback, hence my comment about thousands of pages of reports. But Mr. Lausch can share some of those.
So we have a very rigorous testing regime, and we go through, it's a very detailed schedule, which we've shared with the city, and we review on a weekly basis, in addition to AW3 load testing, speed tests, and so forth. One of them was the climatic chamber test. And we passed all the tests, and we have a certification attesting to that.
Okay. And of these numerous recommendations or suggestions, okay, what happened to those? Did we implement them? Did we review? What did we do with those?
So, yes, some of them were implemented. Some of them had to do with better seals on the windows and the cabs. Some of them had to do with tighter closure of the doors. So we received a list from the NRC. We received recommendations, and then we looked at them, and then based on their merit, we either implemented them or parked them.
Sorry, what was the last part of that?
So if we either implemented them, if they had merit,
correct,
and if not, we parked them. So we didn't ignore them, but we didn't implement them.
Okay, and Mr. Manconi, was your team part of that discussion as to what to implement, what to use the term park them?
Absolutely. So I'll just use the seal as an example. There was one window, I believe, that water was penetrating with intense storm conditions, and that was part of the seal fix that was worked. The defroster on the vehicle. So we're talking about that daily log. I'm sure that's on that because we had operators complaining for weeks on end during our very cold winter that the defroster wasn't keeping up. That's been retrofied. There was heater cab issues and so forth. So, yes, we have vehicle experts full-time on overseeing this. We also have vehicle experts in the plant overseeing the build-out and the modifications and so forth. So, yes, they can't just arbitrarily say, well, no, we're going to ignore something.
And I'm glad to hear you talk about the experts again and that you've reached out to people in New York and Chicago and Boston, because all you have to do is Google any of those train lines, add in the word winter storm, and you're going to see headline after headline about how they've had challenges, they've had delays, or they've trains have stopped or what have you because of the weather. We're a winter country, and that's something that we'd prefer not to deal with, but we need to deal with, which leads to my next question. Mr. Lausch or Mr. Manconi or both, you had indicated you're now responding to a winter event in a different way than you originally planned. So, and we saw a picture of the melter, for example, that you've now got in service and available. Can you tell us what other lessons you've learned from that storm event and what different approaches you're going to use when the train's in service should we have another significant winter event?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So in addition to testing vehicles, in addition to testing additional snow clearing equipment this past weekend,
We've also done a complete survey of the line. When we had the storm after the last big one, we deployed maintenance staff to all the stations along all the guideway. We took a look at our snow fencing. We took a look at the encroachment of the snow banks, if we need to revise that with new equipment. We've also have a maintenance contractor. Alstom is also one of our maintenance contractors. We work together with them to look at additional resources, and these are all built up, and we're issuing a revised winter maintenance plan in mid-April. In the meantime, we've been working with the city on a regular basis. There was a meeting again yesterday where we're looking at opportunities for improvement, and those opportunities are being implemented into the new winter maintenance plan.
Okay. Mr. Manconi's question for you. In light of coordinating with those other cities who have had similar experiences, is there something in the proposed new plan that other cities that's not in the proposed new plan that some of those other sort of eastern, northern type cities are used to deal with a storm when it happens? So are there things you would like to see in the plan that are not in Mr. Welch's plan?
No, I believe it's all trending in the right direction, and the feedback from our experts and their staff has been good. And I also want to point out that it's not just the city and our experts telling RTG. They've been very innovative on their own dime, I might add, bringing in some winter mitigation measures while we're focused on the vehicles. It was RTG that came to us and said they wanted to move to full heated platforms so that there's no buildup of snow and ice on the platforms. And to their credit, they did that. That means less maintenance. That means less risk, less ice buildup, and so forth. They also did modifications to the apron approach at Ottawa U, where the deep tunnel entrance is. That's got a melter incorporated into that. So they've done a lot of good things, and my staff and the consultants and Mr. Lausch's RTM staff went down to Boston and saw their operation firsthand because I have a lot of key contacts down there, and also the former staff members that helped Boston recuperate and buy new equipment and resources for that big storm that I'm sure you've seen that got them frozen in for weeks.
Okay, thanks for that.
Great, thank you. Councillor Meehan, please.
Thank you. I just want to pick up on something that you said earlier, Mr. Manconi. You said, so I think Councillor Kavanaugh was asking whether or not you were confident that this was going to be delivered in Q2, and you said, given what you are told, I thought that you had some independent consultants down watching the progress of the work.
Sorry, I just got interrupted. What was the middle part? Sorry.
You said, given, I guess you were asked whether or not you were confident that the system would be delivered in Q2, and you said, given what you're told that you are. But I thought we had some people down or with the system that are watching the progress of the work right now.
Absolutely. We are watching. The independent assessment team is watching. And when Mr. Lausch presents his roadmap for where he wants to go for his RSA, we will do another review of that with our team and the experts, the independent experts.
So given what you're told from them then, yeah.
Well, except we overlay the expertise on the proposed plan, what's left to be done, and probability and so forth.
So you're confident then this is going to happen by June?
No, I did not say that. What I'm saying is if Mr. Lausch focuses on getting all those eight elements and all he's left with is the vehicles, he is in very good shape to be successful in Q2.
So you concur with him then?
Yeah. No.
No? I'm a little confused.
Those nine critical elements that I went through, if he addresses all of those and all he's left with is the vehicles, which are trending well right now, mm-hmm. he will be in very good shape to land this in Q2 of 2019. He's going to give us his plan. We'll bring our experts in. We'll review that plan, and then we'll be able to articulate back to you what we believe his new date is and whether we're confident in that.
Is there any chance that this could go much later?
As I mentioned earlier, I'm not seeing any indications right now that it'll go later. He's doing well. He needs to continue to do well.
Mm-hmm. When did we bring in the independent oversight? And given what it's provided you now, should we have had that right from the get-go?
I brought it in, I believe it was 2 years ago, and I was not in charge of the file, and I'm not critiquing or criticizing that they should have been brought in earlier. It's an innovative approach. It hasn't been done anywhere else on P3s. I've other jurisdictions that are either doing P3s or contemplating P3s are looking at doing the same thing, and on lessons learned for stage two, we are going to have the same thing and even additional oversight, independent assessment to do a look ahead on things like that. So, no, I think we did the right thing at the right time.
I think so, too. That's all I have. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Councillor Meehan. Councillor Leeper.
Thank you, Mayor. Sorry. Mr. Kanellakos has raised a really important point that I don't think has enough mainstream awareness among residents in Ottawa. The financial penalties that RTG has incurred as a result of missing the deadline, a couple of million dollars, really pale in comparison to the costs that you're undertaking having not been paid the milestone payments. You're bridging that. You don't need to tell us how much you're paying, but we can make some assumptions, and it's a fairly significant amount. Given how much this delay is costing RTG, are you contemplating, have you asked the city for any relief from the requirements of the project agreement?
So as Mr. Manconi, sorry, Mr. Mayor, and Mr. Leeper, as Mr. Manconi said in his slide presentation, we are working through some of the elements of the PA. We have some disputes which we are discussing, but as Mr. Manconi said, we're at the talking stage, and we continue to do so.
Mr. Manconi, you've told us that you're going to adhere to the PA.
Well, I don't want to answer for Mr. Lausch, but let's be clear. While we may have disputes on who owes who what money,
yep.
Mr. Lausch has been 100% aligned that he is going to give us the system, the $2.1 billion system. So I just want Mr. Lausch to correct what he just said there, because there's disputes on change orders and things like that that all get handled through the project agreement. But I've never heard RTG had some preliminary discussions with us about phased openings, which we said no.
Yep.
But up until today, there's never, and I'm sure they will continue to say that they're giving us the system we're paying for. Mr. Lausch, you should comment on that.
Absolutely, Mr. Mayor. 100%, Mr. Manconi is correct.
Okay, so, and that's critical to understand, is that there's no contemplation of asking for any relief of any of the provisions of the PA in order to get RSA to achieve or to be able to get more milestone payments. So that is comforting to hear. And then, again, I think the amount of money that RTG is likely paying out to bridge in the absence of the milestone payments is very significant. May I just ask, Mr. Lausch, what is RTG's commitment to completing this project?
Mr. Mayor, we have a contractual obligation to complete the project, and we will. I can't say more than that.
Sorry?
I said we have a contractual obligation to complete the project, and okay. We're committed, and I think our efforts have proven that. We've not once taken ownership of any of the issues, and we continue to move along towards the revenue service availability date.
Fantastic. That was all. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Blay, please.
Thanks very much, Mr. Mayor. You've talked at great length today about some of the winter testing and some of the successes that have actually happened as opposed to what some of the media commentary has been. My perception is that we haven't received as much freezing rain as normal or as often as we get in the winter. So I'm wondering what experience we've had with ice buildup on the catenaries and our ability to remove that efficiently.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. To date, we haven't seen an issue with ice buildup on the catenaries, but they are designed to take ice buildup load. They are a temperature sensitive system. If you've been out on the line, you see there's counterweights throughout, and those get automatically adjusted, and they're also adjusted seasonally. So it's something that we're monitoring, but to date we've not had an issue.
And so if there is ice buildup on the catenaries, how does one address that?
That's some of the best practices learned, lessons learned out of Boston, is if you, even though you shut down the system at night, you would keep a number of trains running so that you avoid the buildup. You don't go to ice cutting blades. Those have not worked well. So you just keep the trains running up and down a minimal number of fleets.
And so during those snowstorms that are happening overnight and you're going to have vehicles running overnight to avoid buildup, et cetera, what kind of risk does that put on? Because the system's supposed to be shut down at night for maintenance. So what kind of risk does that pose from a maintenance perspective? Like, would we expect to be short trains the next service day? Or
no, that's the very complex environment of the TOCC, the Transit Operation Control Center. So while they're busy during the revenue service day, the busiest time in a control center for rail is off hours. They're doing the logistics of the vehicle count for the next day, the maintenance regime, and so forth. And that's why those spare vehicles are very, very important in terms of that, because the count for the morning rush hour is 15 double vehicles. So the control center would preserve that and balance off if they had to run a vehicle for ice buildup and so forth. We don't have a long distance to travel, so we're fortunate for stage one. And stage two, your vehicle count comes up, and you also added additional vehicles through the PTF funding.
And as going maybe a little bit into stage two, but we expect to get the stage two vehicles, I think, a couple of years before the rest of the system is actually finished. So will we move those vehicles into revenue service on the existing Confederation line, or how is that going to work?
That's actually something we're looking at, and it depends on how all the pieces come together in terms of testing, commissioning of those vehicles, and the CBTC testing and so forth. So yeah, short answer is yes, that's the conceptual plan. We just need to flesh out all the details.
Okay. And on following up, I think, on Councillor Kavanaugh's points about fixing some of the bus routes, how much of that is reliant on getting the additional buses that are coming out of service versus the new buses you're buying in the budget?
No, that's a good question. It's not the bus count, it's the logistics count on, it's the logistics details associated with the routes. And that's the piece that I've challenged Pat on, and so far he hasn't been able to unlock that one there. So it's not about bus shortage availability, because what we would do, if we could, I would bridge it with some of those vehicles that we're getting rid of and hang on to some operators if we needed to. And that's what I was discussing with Pat last week, because, again, all of you are asking for that. So we'll continue to look at it, but I'm not hopeful.
So it's not about the shortage of buses today. It's about the rest of how it connects network-wide.
Correct.
Okay. And then going back to Councillor Dudas and the 417, which we've talked about quite often, it doesn't appear to be in very good shape, the ramp. And so I doubt that if the train were to open tomorrow, it would be usable. Do we know from MTO what the plan is to rehabilitate that and what kind of lag time there might be, or if there is a lag time?
Great question. That's what Phil's working with MTO right now on, because I told him I wanted it ramp open ready, like as soon as we get the green light. So that's his mission right now, and I'll follow up with him, Councillor, and get back to you on that one.
Perfect. Appreciate that. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Great. Thank you. Does anyone else wish to comment or question? Councillor Menard.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Just very quickly, the $5 million in changes that we were going to put into service as of, I guess, April 1st, or when the line would be running, maybe the end of April, we're going to get some time back on that now. So the cost may not be as high as $5 million in total. if it does launch in June, how much would be available there from the $5 million that would have been in service? I mean, I guess a couple of months?
I'd have to get staff to run the numbers. We can certainly get you that.
Okay, because that could be a potential revenue source if we are looking at a further delay. Of course, we are looking at a further delay in terms of the fares that exist right now, that are frozen right now, for a continuation of those fare freeze. That could be a potential revenue source. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Merci pour votre participation. Notice the motion for consideration of subsequent meeting. Any written inquiries, Madam Clerk? Other business? Adjournment. Meeting adjourned. Thank you very much. We'll see you all here tomorrow.